your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapeley Graylian. This week I'm talking to Jay Kumar of the Completely Conspicuous podcast. You may recall him from some of the tweet casts. We watched the gold medal game together, and then we settled in to talk about the Olympics and his favorite team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome to the rink. Happy to finally sit down face-to-face with Jay Kumar.
How's it going?
Hey. Jay has been on the tweet casts that I've done. We're pulled Twitter a little bit. And actually, I just finished watching the gold medal game, USA versus Canada. And I'm slightly in denial still.
Truly,
only a little.
Truly exciting game.
Oh, my.
You know, nail biters, edge of your seat, whatever you want to call
it. I couldn't believe it. I just the tying the game up at the end, and then going to overtime like they did.
I think the key though was the act of sticks for Canada. Eddie Olczyk, you know.
Does he pay you $5 every time you say act of stick?
After stick,
the quick stick. The I think that the key to it all was that. They weren't that nobody checked Sidney Crosby at the end there.
Yeah. Well,
out of the play,
you know, it was a hell of a play by Iginla to, you know, sort of behind the back pass, mm-hmm. you know, right, set him free, and yeah, he was uncovered. I think the U.S. guys were kind of looking to go the other way, and
yeah,
and I think Miller reacted a split second too late. I mean, I think it was a savable shot.
You know? Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it wasn't like it was so fast that he, you know, just missed it.
Well, and compared to some of the other ones that they'd stopped throughout the tournament. So, you know, what stood out to you in that gold medal game? And then we can go back a little bit and just kind of recap the Olympics a little as to what you saw.
Really? I mean, and it was kind of a theme throughout the games for Team Canada was Luongo. I mean, I was not impressed with him at all. I thought he was very shaky. And they pointed it out on NBC that, you know, he was coughing up the puck, you know. His glove hand, for whatever reason, every time he would catch the puck, it would pop out. And,
yeah.
You know, and that was directly responsible for that tying goal, you know, in the waning seconds of regulation. So, you know, that stood out to me. And just, you know, I was impressed with the U.S., you know, kind of sticking with it. I mean, it was a great game, no doubt. I mean, they fell into a hole, but, you know, for them to battle back, I still say that, you know, nobody expected them to even come close to a medal, so...
Yeah, that's
for them
true.
To get a, you know, it's a crappy way to lose, but
That's the one thing about this sport is like, and I guess it's with a lot of the team sports like curling as well, is that when you're just head to head to win the second place medal, you have to lose that last game, and that's heartbreaking.
Whereas Timo Solani, win, you win the bronze. You have
I was
to win
reading
a game.
On Puck Daddy that Timo Solani said that this was almost more satisfying to win the bronze because you actually win the game,
and
then you get your medal rather than losing the game, and then you gotta
especially in such a heartbreaking fashion. For the U.S.
Well, the I think you're right with Luongo. I was really surprised at how shaky he looked. With especially with his glove hand, and then B, that the U.S. didn't try and capitalize a little bit more on that. It seemed like that there were times when they really could have dug in deep and maybe just thrown something to him and seen what popped out rather than that one extra pass.
And they really didn't have any chances in the overtime. I think, you know, give Canada credit, they kind of stepped up. I think they were a little more assertive in the overtime, whereas the U.S. seemed a little tentative. But, you know, and the Canadian D played pretty well all game. So, you know, give them credit for that.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
I mean, obviously they won. But Luongo, I mean, you know, I watched pretty much every game that Canada played. And, you know, since Brodeur got pulled after that loss to the U.S., you know, Luongo has looked shaky.
You really can't blame Brodeur. There was a pizza guy there.
He was distracted.
He was like, hey, I got to tip this guy, and, you know, and Patrick Kane didn't have any change for him, and you know how it is. Sorry, it's a little digs there. Brodeur was pretty shaky overall. I mean, he was not the Brodeur that everybody's used to seeing.
But Luongo, you know, granted, pretty much every game he played, except for the last one against the previous one against Slovakia, you know, he didn't have to be awesome. You know, they were blowing teams out, you know, Germany and whoever the other one was. But, like, he, you know, he Russia. That was a big win against Russia. It wasn't because Luongo stood on his head. It was because Canada, you know, just raced out to a huge lead, and you know, and then he let a couple of softies in when it didn't matter. But you know, he just looked like he was fighting the puck the whole time. And I don't know if it was, you know, nerves on such a big stage or what, but you know, maybe he's got an injury. I don't know, but
it seemed like it was the same thing over and over. It seemed like the glove just wasn't closing around.
Rebound control wasn't good. You know, pucks were just flopping all over the place.
Yeah, it seemed like maybe just he was a little off his speed. It's hard to say. I mean, you're right. It may be an injury thing, and you're not. You know, if he's still playing in the NHL when we get back, we're not going to hear anything about it.
Yeah, maybe he's maybe he's got a finger problem or something. Maybe one of his fingers is broken. Who knows? But you know, they won, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's true. What overall the Olympics? It was a lot more fun than I expected it to be.
Yeah, I know. It was a blast. Yeah, it was fun to see Jaromir Jagr playing again with the mullet.
Yep.
You know, you got to love the mullet.
He came out really strong. Yeah. And then it seemed like he faded away after that, but he was really strong for
maybe
the first couple
maybe
of games.
He got hurt on the Ovechkin hit.
That's true.
Ovechkin nailed him in that game last Sunday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically that cost the game for the Czechs. And after that, he seemed kind of not the same. So maybe he was injured then. I don't know.
And he missed a little time on their next game.
Yeah. So maybe he was more banged up than he admitted. I mean, after the game, he was kind of like, you know, it wasn't the hit. You know, it was just, you know, obviously it was, you know, losing the game. It's, you know, you can't, you know, that can't happen. He was, you know, he was very, you know, upfront about, yeah, you know, I can't cough up the puck like that. Yeah. So, but, you know, he must have been hurt more than we knew. So
the dogs of the tournament were pretty much Germany, Latvia, Belarus is always a little dangerous, I guess, but really they were, you know,
I mean, they've knocked off some, you know, they knocked off Sweden, and I think they knocked off Canada in the last tournament, actually. Belarus did.
Was it?
Or Switzerland did. But like, I mean, you know, team like Switzerland with a good goalie like Jonas Hiller, you know, they obviously made some noise, and you know, they're not the most gifted offensive team, but you know, obviously their goalie, you know, stood on his head. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
which is what happened last time. Gerber stood on his head, and I think, what was it, 50 saves against the Canadians when they won?
Yeah.
And they still got some pucks through, through Canada. But, I mean, of course, they were still playing Brodeur at the time. And, you know,
Canada had to go to a shootout to beat them. So, Sweden was a big disappointment. You know, you figured they would be in the medal hunt, and they, you know, kind of bowed out quickly. The Slovaks, you know, almost knock off Canada. You know, and that was with a huge finish. You know, Canada kind of sat back in the third period Friday night, and really, like, they were – Pavel Dimitra alone had, you know, two or three glorious chances at the end there to at least tie up the game and missed them. So,
well, and then look what happened in the bronze medal game against
Finland. Then they totally choked against Finland. Yeah.
I mean, in that one, I think I said that Miroslav Satan was so soft in the corner, I could take the puck from him. It was just –
they showed a play against Canada where, like, he basically he had the puck, and there were two Canadian defensemen – you know, coming in, bearing in on him, and he basically just sort of let them take it. He didn't want to take the hit. You know, he would have had to take a big hit to make a play, and he just kind of.
And really, what's
he
going to do? Who's he playing for right now? The Bruins?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, he's a cheap player for the Bruins. He was sitting on the sofa for so long.
Yeah.
So you might as well. What else are you going to do?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, he's never been known for being a physical player. So.
No. But you gotta do something. At least. And Switzerland actually was pretty surprising to me. I mean, they relied on Hiller a lot, you know, and as
they
everybody would expect to. Yeah, they played really hard. Yeah. And, you know, even their their defense was fairly good.
Yeah, Mark Streit, he really stepped up. I mean, he's a good player in the NHL anyway. Good power play quarterback. And just, you know, I was really impressed with him. And, they definitely – you know, we're tough. I don't think they were. I think the first game against the U.S., they lost like 6-1 or something like that. But other than that, I thought they played really well.
So. Yeah, they're kind of the top of that second tier of teams. But, I mean, how many – looking at the Olympics, you really want something competitive. And what do we have? Maybe – I mean, there are four teams really I see that are actual – contenders, I guess five now, Finland, Sweden, Russia, Canada, and U.S. And then after that, it kind of gets to that second tier.
Czechs and Slovaks. I mean, you know, I mean, they have the talent, you know, obviously, you know, very easily could have been the Slovaks in the gold medal game, you know, literally a couple of bounces on Friday night and, and they're, you know, they're in for the gold and who knows, you know, I mean, you know, goalie gets hot and.
Can you imagine the national Canadian nightmare?
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a playing for a bronze. That just would
have... Well, I mean, last Olympics they didn't play for anything. They got booted right early. So
But for both teams,
on home ice it would have really been bad. Yeah. You know,
for that, and also with looking at their team and the U.S. team, I mean, these were significantly retooled teams from before. They out with the old and with the new.
Yeah.
They were leaving behind guys that, you know, have their effectiveness in the NHL. Like I look at the Dion Phaneuf, you know, as they call it snub, but really Dion Phaneuf's game is all about the NHL and not about the less physical, international.
Yeah. Game. I mean, you know, I think Canada definitely played aggressively and, you know, I think when they started playing better, they were hitting guys and they were, you know, they were banging. But yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, you can't line up a guy for a huge open ice hit in Olympic hockey because the guy will, you know, guy will step around you. you know, you're going to get burned. So, you know, could he have played on that team? Probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't argue with the guys they picked. I know maybe you could argue with actually Pronger and Niedermeyer at first. They both were struggling out of the gate. Niedermeyer definitely stepped up his game. I thought Pronger was okay in the last couple of games. It wasn't great.
He was generally invisible until he really got.
I think he's slowing down. You know, I mean, he was good, kind of getting in the way. You know, kind of clogging up the lanes in front of the net, and you know, it made it hard for the U.S. to get clear shots on and stuff like that.
But if this was 2 years ago, they would have been a totally different picture because, you know, of course, was it 2007? They were each playing a half an hour a game,
right?
You know, of ice time and eating up minutes. You know, and that was a couple of years ago. Obviously,
he's probably still playing a good 25 minutes a game for the Flyers, right? Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they're both obviously older and a little slower and. But yeah, both those teams, both those North American teams, added some strong young defensemen. I was really impressed with Jack Johnson and Eric Johnson on the U.S. team. Really impressed with Shea Weber, Dan Boyle to a lesser extent. But you know, I mean, just you know, the young guys, you know, who play in sort of smaller markets, really, you know, kind of made it more of a name for themselves. So.
Yeah. And also, of course, on that. Cup winning team for the Ducks was Timo Solani, who you know, and now this is his last Olympics, and he's the most points, highest point scorer ever of the in the Olympics,
37, something like that. Yeah,
that's insane. Five Olympics, I think, for him was what they were saying.
Yeah, well, I figure he's been in the NHL since '92, so
wow, that's probably it for him. I mean, if he comes back next year, I'll be amazed.
Yeah, he was saying, like, I guess he's done this before where he said he's, you know, this is my last year and then he ends up coming back. But he said, like, you know, this is his last Olympics and probably his last season. So, I mean, be a pretty good way to go out.
Hard to blame him.
Olympics, yeah.
No, he was a heck of a player.
And, yeah.
You know, still is a heck of a player.
76 goals his rookie year.
Yeah, that's just the old Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's next year. It's in Russia, and
or next Olympics.
Next Olympics, yeah. Sorry, next year. Next Olympics, it's in Russia, and I assume that we're going back to the larger ice surface.
Yeah,
at this point, I can't wait to. You know, I mean, I'm guessing that the U.S. and Canadian teams are going to look vastly similar to what they do now. Probably a couple of guys who...
If Mr. Bettman chooses to...
well, exactly.
and the union. I guess the union was against it, too, going back.
Really?
Yeah, they were kind of... Well, I think, you know, it's one of those things where it takes away from, you know... I mean, I know that at least there were some rumblings along those lines that, yeah, you know, it's great to play for your country, but, you know, it's, you know, kind of wrecks it... Breaks up the season, you know, revenues kind of, you know, breaks up, you know.
Well, now that, you know, of course, with the changes in the union, Paul Kelly is way done for at this point. Yeah. They finally settled on that. And I'm sure that post Olympics, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they've got to look at the ratings and just the, you know, the reaction to this. I mean, how could they not go? I mean,
No, absolutely.
I think the argument in the past was like, you know, the NHL was going to get this great kind of PR boost from being in the Olympics, and then, you know, after 98, you know, after the three Olympics, they really didn't factor in at all. You know, there were some probably momentary attention, but right. You know, they didn't see a huge boost in attendance because of, you know, players playing in the Olympics. But
right,
and I suspect if the U.S. had won today, you know, there'd be much more. You know, I mean, I think
a lot
of people were paying attention that aren't normally hockey fans this time around. So
right.
Because the U.S. did so well, so and I think they still, you know. Even losing today, I think it's still, you know, a huge positive for the U.S. team. So, you know, I just think, you know, you get on, you know, everybody's radar playing the Olympics, and it's the best hockey in the world. I mean, you know, we're going back to the regular season starting tomorrow. I mean, you expect the games to be as good as the one today?
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. No. I mean, when you finally start getting into where fourth line on any team, you know, fourth line on these teams were, you know, what team, you know, first or second line.
Right. You know, Brendan Morrow started off playing on the fourth line for Team Canada. He's the captain and, you know, leading ice time getter for the Stars and, you know, and obviously worked his way up to getting on the power play. You know, he played a great, great tournament. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You know, you get teams with like 6-7 captains of their NHL teams on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, naturally the level of play is going to be higher. You know, it's back to the grind.
It's back to the grind. Actually, like immediately after, was it the Monday after? I think they were saying that the Red Wings play.
Yep.
Mike Babcock has to get a new pack of gum and go play some, you know, go coach somewhere.
New bucket to throw all the chewed gum in.
And that's the thing. I mean, we're looking now, we're staring down the rest of the season. Wednesday is the trade deadline.
Yeah,
which just seems crazy. It just it seems like so fast.
And it sounds like there's a lot of deals that are kind of ready to be announced. You know,
I
sort of read rumblings that, you know, the Bruins have a deal in place and the Leafs probably are going to trade a few guys. You know,
more guys?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, you know, you got Cabrera. You know, you got some guys who, you know, obviously they're in last place, so they're looking to kind of. You know, dump some more salary, get some more young guys probably. So.
Well, and if you're going to, you know, you're not going to have the draft picks that you thought you were going to have, you know, because of the whole Kessel deal.
Bruins are, though.
Yeah. Oh, are they? Oh, are they?
Of course, the Bruins aren't playing that well either, so.
No, and they could, you know.
They could have two top five picks. They could have the 1 and 2.
I don't think they'll be in that big of a battle to drop down for the, with the Carolina Hurricanes. I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, right. But.
You know, the Bruins are at the top of the season. I think I've said this before, but at the top, the very first game of the season on Versus was Capitals versus Bruins.
Right.
And I remember saying, I like the offense of the Capitals, but I like just about everything about the Bruins. And boy, was I wrong.
Well, I mean, you know,
you wouldn't have thought on paper.
Yeah. You look at how they played last year, you know, and they lost a tough series to Carolina in the playoffs, and you know I expected them to beat Carolina. I mean, Carolina almost should have been beaten by New Jersey, and they came back in that game against scored what, 2 goals in the last 30 seconds or something crazy like that on Brodeur. I mean, you don't see that normally, but
not unless you're playing in the Olympics.
Yeah, the Bees just have had a disaster of a year.
Yeah.
Injuries, you know, to just about everybody. I mean, the only thing that's been really good for them has been the goaltending. Thomas has struggled a little bit, but really it's Tuukka Rask, who is the backup, you know, really young goalie, has stepped up and has played terrific. But
who was also acquired from the Leafs, right?
Yeah, for Andrew Raycroft. Horrendous trade.
Oh yeah. Well, any trade involving Andrew Raycroft, you can immediately see who's going to lose that trade.
John Ferguson Jr. Thank you very much. But
well, and then you know he goes to the Avalanche and does
now
so well.
Now he's on
there.
Vancouver.
Now he's on Vancouver.
And, backing up Luongo.
Yeah. So he sees his 10 games a year, loses those 10 games, and there was a time when he was decent. You know, he was
the rookie of the year.
He was the rookie of the year
for the Bruins, and then he ended up on the next year he struggled. He ended up on the Leafs. He won 37 or 38 games for the Leafs his first year there. But even then, I'm full disclosure, I'm a Leafs fan.
And we're gonna get to them in a moment. Oh,
but,
yeah.
I watched a lot of those games, and he still kind of had that tendency to give up soft goals at inopportune times. I mean, And it just like after that, you know, he actually after that year, they end up getting Vesa-Toskala and creating this kind of bizarre goaltending controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Roycroft gets traded and to the Avs, and Toskala falls apart. Yeah. So it's been a nightmare for the Leafs. But yeah, back to the Bruins. You know, they've had a lot of injuries on defense. They've had a lot of their major offensive guys. You know, they traded Phil Kessel. Savard's been hurt. Bergeron had an injury. Lucic was hurt. So, you know, and they didn't have a ton of offense. They didn't replace Kessel, you know, scored 36 goals. You know, say what you will about his defensive prowess, but, you know, a guy knows how to score, and the Bruins did nothing to really make up for that. And so, hence the signing of Miro Chatan, you know, who was sitting on
his couch.
Who's
going to get you two or three. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was you think Kessel was bad defensively? Look at, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a disappointing year for the Bruins. But well, they've got that pick and, you know.
Yeah.
And
a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I think
they still have a shot at the playoffs, too.
So. I think they were expecting something more from Bergeron when he came back. You know, that there was
Bergeron. Well, they didn't really know because he got that bad concussion.
The thing, yeah.
And they thought, you know, a lot of people thought his career was over. I mean, it took him a long time to recover. He actually has played pretty well. He's probably been one of their better players. I think he broke a finger. He got slashed at one point. So he can't really at least before the Olympics, he was having trouble shooting. You know, he's taking faceoffs and stuff. But, you know, obviously, like, you know, his hand strength isn't, you know, what it was. So he's hampered offensively.
Well, and then he was minimized on the Olympics as well.
Well, and they kind of knew that. I mean, he was brought in as a faceoff and PK guy. But, you know, I think he's certainly bounced back a lot better, you know, about as well as they had hoped. I mean, obviously, you know, when he first came in the league, he's a 70, 80-point scorer, so he's not quite back to that. But, you know, he could get back to that. You know, obviously it's not happening this year. But,
You got to wonder about guys like that because, you know, you look at the big Joe Thornton and, you know, when he's, you know, he's a very talented guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an assist guy. He's not a goal scorer. He's an assist guy. He's a playmaker. And, you know, he struggled all the time on the Bruins. I think they expected a lot more from him than they got. And, you know, maybe trying to put him into roles they shouldn't have been, like the captain.
They wanted
him
to be the captain. They wanted him, you know, they wanted to sort of fit that big bad Bruins mold of, you know, score, you know, basically get a Gordie Howe hat trick, you know, score a goal, you know, get in a fight, get an assist, you know, but he's not a fighter. He's a big guy, but he doesn't really use his size for that. He uses his size to gain advantage on the defenseman and set up, you know, around the net and, you know, set up other guys for goals. And obviously we've seen what happens when he does that in San Jose. He's, you know, he was the MVP the year after he got traded. You know, I mean, he hasn't been able to lead them to the Stanley Cup with, you know, some supremely talented teams. And, he, you know, once again, they've got, you know, they got Danny Heatley and Patrick Marleau on his line, and they're ripping up the league right now. But let's see what they do in, you know, in the spring. But
that's always the thing with them is they get to that first or second round and then it's disappointment. And last year,
I like him. I think he's a really good player. I'd love to see him, you know, win a cup because I think he's been, you know, there are players who fit different roles. He's not a Messier. You know, he's not going to be that kind of guy, and he never will be.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's a good piece. You know, he's a good player to have on a stacked team. And, you know, I think, you know, Doug Wilson does a great job out there in San Jose, and every year they have a shot. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny because you're looking at the Olympics and what's going back. You got pretty much a very high scoring line that was with the Olympics and Boyle he was great. And then you've got two goaltenders that really stank in the Olympics. I mean, Nabokov was awful in that game against against Canada.
Yeah.
And, was it Greece?
Yeah.
When he played, he was pretty poor also. I mean,
he did all right I only saw him, when they played Canada, and he did okay at the beginning of the game, but then they started lighting him up. But I mean, you can't really blame him for all of that because, you know, his team was so overmatched. But I don't really know a lot about him, but you know, he's a young kid, I think, so he certainly got, you know, he's not going to play that much this year anyway. But yeah, Nabokov was surprising, you know, how he got lit up by Canada. But again, I think the Russians, you know, the forwards certainly weren't helping out you know, with the D, and the D I think was weak to begin with. So
So it's basically the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, right. That's
basically what we were watching
and,
out there.
You know, now he's going to be back facing NHL shooters who are, you know, not going to be as deadly as, you know, some of the competition he was facing in that tournament. Mm-hmm. So
that's true. That's true. At least not all the time.
Right. You know, Yeah, but yeah, you know, at least like part of the game you're going to face, you know, schmucks on the third or fourth line. So, you know, you're going to face some grinders and, you know, it's going to be a little more.
Yeah, you have your shots from Scott Hannon or David Krejci. Exactly. Like, oh, well, okay. Yeah. That was fun. Watch that one go wide. Watch that one go
Wayne
wide.
Primo, you know.
the other Primo.
Lee Stempniak going to be shooting it wide, you know. Lee Stempniak.
Everybody talks about that one shot that he had this season that just he wound up and it went straight to the corner.
He consistently misses a net. He gets in chance. Like, he's good. He's a good skater. He gets into position and misses or hits a post like more than anybody. He's so frustrating to watch sometimes. Another, you know, every once in a while he'll put it together and, you know, score a nice goal. But it's
Eddie Garcia of the Puck Podcast. I was skating with him in Anaheim. And even he was saying, that Stempniak shot. That Stempniak shot. It was exactly everybody who's seen it just wants to talk about it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Well, I mean, I was listening to an episode of your podcast, Completely Conspicuous.
Yes.
And you were talking about your lifelong love of the Leafs and how hard it's been. Being a Leafs fan.
It's been a tough road.
Yeah. But now, I mean, is you've seen changes in the Leafs. I mean, it seems like, you know, every GM that's come through in the last several years, I mean, it's okay, we're going to do something different. We're going to do something different. We're going to blow it up. And it's generally the same results.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny because people maligned Pat Quinn actually was the GM while he was coach for a few years. And you know, they actually, you know, they didn't win anything. They didn't win the cup, but, you know, they went pretty far. They made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they made it to, you know, conference semis a couple of times. I mean, they were, you know,
was this also 93?
No, this is, I'm talking like late 90s. Oh. You know, basically Matt Sundin was the captain. You know, they had Alex McGillney. They lost to Carolina in 02 when Carolina went on to the finals. You know, they made it to the Final Four that year. You know, they had Curtis Joseph, they had a pretty good goalie. Mm-hmm. You know, then they had Eddie Belfour. I mean, they had good goalies. You know, they played a pretty up-tempo game. You know, it was decent to watch. But then, you know, he kind of fell out of favor. And, you know, they brought in John Ferguson Jr., who had, you know, not run anything before. He'd been a scout, I think, or assistant GM for the Blues. And he just destroyed that team. I mean, made some of the trades we mentioned, you know, getting Ray Kraft, it was brutal. So, yeah, and then now Brian Burke's in there. And, you know, I think, you know, people malign him for the Kessel trade, you know, trading at least first rounder, actually two first rounders for Kessel. And, you know, it's one of those things where he was looking for a proven commodity. You know, he's a 22-year-old guy who scored 36 goals in, you know, I think 60 games last year. You know, they needed offense. I think he clearly expected the team to play better and not be, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. So, but
first rounder would have really been a roll of the dice if they had. I mean,
You know, still could be, you know,
could be, but
you don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't want to give up the first pick overall or whatever, but, you know, when that trade happened, I was kind of bummed out that they gave up so much for him. Mm-hmm. By the same token, you know, he has made some other pretty good moves. You know, he's getting a lot of kind of dead weight off the team and, you know, picking up Jaguar. Well,
pretty good moves. I mean, that recent seven player move and getting in. Yeah. I mean, he's really changed the look of the team.
Which he kind of had to. I mean, they were just going nowhere. Mm-hmm. Getting Phaneuf, you know, it's been a good trade. I mean, he's played really well. Obviously, he needed a change of scenery. It wasn't working out for him in Calgary.
And he seems like one of those players that Burke would be coveting, like, since...
He's only 24. I mean, it's, you know, people are, like, writing the guy off, like, as it has been. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, he was a Norris Trophy finalist.
Yeah. Oh, I hated playing against him. I was in Calgary, and they had... we'd walk by a mall, you know, a store in a mall that had all kinds of Flames gear, and I really wanted to get a FNUF shirt to write "Is a Punk" on the back.
Well, yeah, he is not well liked.
Oh no, God no! But anywhere, he's one of those guys that you hate playing against, and you know, Flames fans eventually didn't, but you know, they loved having him when
first
he was,
game, you know, first shift with the Leafs, he levels a guy, gets in a fight, you know, they end up beating New Jersey. I mean, it was a great game. So, yeah. You know, hopefully he can keep
it going. And Jaguar got a shutout.
Got
a shutout the next game, too. Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to probably make a few more moves. And, you know, it's a lost season. But there is hope on the horizon. Mm-hmm. I've just seen so many crappy teams over the years. So, you know, what's a couple more years? It's been 42. Well,
I hear that a lot of the, you know, the hope on the horizon kind of thing. And we've heard it before from Leafs fans.
You heard it from me earlier this season. I was saying there was hope on the horizon. So,
but, you know, with giving up the draft picks, and you follow the team a lot closer than I do, obviously, you know, do they have enough in their system right now that they can give those up and still be somewhat comfortable?
Well, yeah, I think that was another big reason. You know, getting in Castle, who's so young, who's 22, you mm-hmm. know, came up pretty young. Their first rounder from last year was, I think he was the fifth pick overall. Nazem Kadri mm-hmm. has been really good. They sent him back to junior, and he lit up junior. They actually just brought him up. He played one game when a couple of guys were out with the flu right before the Olympic break and didn't look, you know, too out of place. I mean, he's speedy. He's still kind of undersized, needs to put on some bulk, but, you know, he's just shifty forward. So, you know, he looks like he's going to be good. They signed some pretty good kids out of college last year. Tyler Bozak, who's actually played really well. He's been playing on the top line, actually, with Kessel. For the last, I don't know, 3 weeks or so, and I think he's got like 10 points in 13 games, something like that. I mean, yeah, he's a good player. I think he's out of Colorado College, something like that. They've signed Christian Hansen, and who is probably best known for being the son of one of the Hansen brothers. But he played at Notre Dame 4 years, was a good offensive player, kind of big kid. Victor Stahlberg out of Vermont. He was a Hobie Baker finalist last year. So they've got some guys who Berkelet kind of like, you know, in lieu of having draft picks has been, you know, kind of looking for those college free agents. I think he likes to go that route. So he's kind of signed a bunch of those guys. You know, they've got a few pretty decent players in the juniors. They've got this kid Jerry D'Amigo, who played for the U.S. World Junior team, who's a really good player for them. You got a kid on Boston College. His name's Jimmy Hayes, who's pretty good. So, you know, the cupboards were bare for a while, which I also blame on John Ferguson Jr. But he did make a few good. Actually, he drafted Stahlberg. They've got some decent young players. They've got some good players on the roster now. Luke Shen was a top pick. A couple of years ago, and had a good rookie year last year. Was struggling horrendously this year, but in the last few weeks has actually picked up his game, and I think part of that was because they got FNUF, and he's definitely, you know, he's kind of back to being a physical force again. He got a few goals, two goals in a game a couple weeks ago. And
you know what got him those goals? An active stick.
Active stick,
Probably
an active puck, too. But, yeah, you know, I can only, you know, hope for good things. You know, who knows? But, they do have a lot of, you know, he's building the team around young talent. He's not, you know, I mean, I think the problem in the past was they would, you know, often with, Pat Quinn and Cliff Fletcher, they would, trade young guys at the deadline for veterans. You know, traded for Brian Leetch. They traded for Ron Francis's last season. You know, right before the lockout, they were, you know, they had Glenn Wesley. They traded for Owen Nolan. You know,
which worked when you were pre lockout.
And they had a lot of money to spend. Yeah. But it didn't work in that, you know, they got older and it was one of those things where you're giving up your future to hopefully win today, and they still weren't good enough to win today, and then they end up with nothing. So,
poor Ronnie Franchise, man. That guy, late in his career, and he leaves right before Carolina's, you know, wins
their
cup.
He got two cups with the Penguins, though, so it wasn't like he, wasn't a total loss for him, but he wanted to win there. But.
Oh yeah, he wanted to win there. He wanted to be the guy, and you know, turns out
he got to the finals.
Was the guy, and He's always been that underrated guy that nobody ever seems to notice until he's putting in the net, which he did often.
He was the reason the Penguins won that first cup, I think, because they made that trade. Craig Pratic made that trade to get him. Halfway through the season, he turned that team around. So
yeah.
Just gave him that kind of one more threat plus a little defensive conscience because they had Lemieux and Jágr, racing up, but not playing any D. So
right.
Those teams. I mean, you look at like some of those old highlight, NHL Network. They show some of those old Cup run videos and stuff of like the Penguins in the early '90s. Those teams were stacked.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
they had Brian Trotje on the fourth line. I mean,
you didn't have 30 teams at the time.
Yeah, yeah,
that kind of helps. So you live, we're in Boston right now. You live in Boston, and there is a ton of college hockey around.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Do you get to go to much college hockey?
I go to a little. I don't go to a ton, but I went to University of New Hampshire, so I'm a UNH fan, and they're in Hockey East, which is one of the best college hockey conferences in the country.
Yeah.
And they've got Boston College, Boston University, Northeastern, Vermont, Maine. So, a lot of good teams. UMass is really good. Jonathan Quick went to UMass, Amherst, UMass Lowell. I think I was actually looking at the top 20 rankings, college rankings. I think there's 5 teams in the top 20 out of Hockey East.
And wow.
Pretty good. So, I actually have a buddy who has Boston University season tickets, so I go to a couple of games with him. And,
nice.
And they're always, having a little bit of an off year this year, but
they lost the beanpot.
They did lose.
When do they do that?
Yeah,
that's been called the Boston University Invitational sometimes, right?
Yeah, they're actually defending national champions too, but they lost a few guys and kind of have been struggling. But
that's kind of the nature of the game for college, right? I mean, you guys
go pro,
you have 4 years at the most, at the absolute most.
And the real good ones usually only have them for a couple of years, Yeah, they actually seem to be slow starters anyway. Like they always seem to pick it up, after the beanpot.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they win the beanpot and then they kind of go on to a strong run. So
for those that don't know what the beanpot is, it's the local tournament between Harvard,
Northeastern,
BC and BU.
Yeah.
And this year it was BC versus BU.
Which it usually is.
Yeah.
they're obviously bigger, better teams, although Northeastern's been pretty decent this year.
Northeastern, I thought, was they were really taking it to BC in their game. And Harvard was just awful.
But it's fun hockey. It's very offensive-minded.
Oh, it's great.
They removed the red line before the NHL did. Like, they always kind of had those, you had those kind of long bomb passes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no touch icing, and it's just, there's no fighting allowed. But there's big hitting. The Hockey East players are pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those guys are going to the NHL now. So
I think it surprises people how good the hockey actually is at the college level. A lot of people say, there's no fighting and there's not that much hitting and there's so many mistakes and blah, blah, blah. But those mistakes turn into chances, scoring chances, which is what people want in the NHL.
It's an exciting game.
It's a really exciting game.
I'd encourage anybody who's, near a D1 school to check out a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. So
Denver's pretty lucky that they have DU right there, and then Colorado College down the road.
Yeah,
so
good teams too. Yeah. So, like the lockout year, I went to a lot of college hockey that year. Because it was the only game in town. I went to a couple minor league games, but went to some. It was Lowell Lock Monsters at the time. Now it's Lowell Devils.
Yep.
But we've actually got a lot of AHL teams in the area. Manchester Monarchs is.
Providence Bruins.
Yeah, Providence Bruins.
Yep.
Springfield.
Wolfpack.
Springfield's got a team. Yeah, there's a ton of teams around. Worcester's got a team. I think that's St. Louis's team.
Sharks
team. Yep. Worcester Sharks, yeah.
But used to be St. Louis when it was the Ice Cats.
Yeah,
yep.
These teams changed.
And that's an awful place to play. I mean, I've been to a game in Worcester, and it was just horrible.
I've been to more rock concerts at the Worcester Centrum than hockey games. But
the DCU.
Yeah, it used to be called the Worcester Centrum back in the day. So.
All
the big metal shows would go there. So.
Yeah, Lowell now has the Devils, the Lowell Devils.
Yeah. They used to have the Canes. They had the Lock Monsters were the Canes team.
Well, that was the thing. When during the lockout, who was up there? Cole was up there.
Yep.
Eric Stahl was up there. Mike Commodore was up there.
Yep.
And they were, they got that one. They got that extra year in the AHL, which was the top, basically the top tier
minor league. Yeah.
It was the top tier of hockey in the country, basically, because the NHL was done for that year. And I think that really helped him out. I mean, that was a solid core to get that extra year of seasoning before.
It's funny because, like, on one hand, it killed a lot of careers, you know, of guys who, like, probably had one more year, like Brian Leetch and, you know, Ronnie Francis. And every other guy that the Leafs signed right before that season. But, you know, there were a lot of Messier, you know, there were a lot of guys who, you know, probably could have made one more go at it. But, you know, after the lockout, just decided to hang them up.
Well, that and also they also had the rule changes that basically favored the faster, younger guys.
Yeah.
You know, out with the old, in with the new kind of worked both ways.
Yeah. It was funny, like, watching, you know, a guy like Jason Allison. You know, who missed some time and then came back with the Leafs after the lockout, and he was so slow. There was one shootout. You know, the shootout started, and after the lockout, and he was going in on a shootout, and like you could have gone out for a walk around the block and come back, and you'd still be going on the ice. I mean, the guy was just you know, his game was kind of setting up behind the net and guys, you know, kind of all over him and passing and stuff. But I mean, that the new game. Just passed him by. And the funny thing is, like, Leafs actually invited him to camp this year in August. And he did okay. Like, he kind of thought he was going to make the team, but they ended up at the end sort of deciding not to sign him. But, I mean, you know, there's a whole, you know, generation of players who just can't play in today's league. And that's why you're seeing so many young guys getting brought up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of guys, you know, there are guys like Mike Keane are still playing in the minors, you know, because they want to keep playing, but they can't play in the NHL anymore.
Yeah.
Chelios, you know, so.
Chelios is kind of that. Is kind of that special case, though. I mean, he's gonna play until he loses a leg.
Yeah, he's gonna play until like they actually like get it some kind of cord injunction to, you know, not allow him anywhere near a hockey rink.
Yeah, it's just it's
67.
Inhumane.
You need to go home.
But like, if Mike Modano wasn't Mike Modano, he'd be on the Texas Stars, or you know, he'd be done for if he weren't for, you know, him being who he is and who he is to that franchise.
Yeah, you wonder, like, if, you know, if it's just that reputation that keeps guys from, you know, if they really want to play, but they just can't, you know, it's not good for, you know, their reputation, you know, to go play in the minors for five more years. You know?
Right.
I mean, remember, like, Guy Lafleur came back and played for a couple of years in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, after being retired for, like, I don't know, 5-6 years.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, do you want to go back to riding a bus or hauling your own bag? Or, you know, once you've had that taste of the NHL for so long and enough success, you know, is that really what you know? I think, you know, I wonder if it's a lifestyle question, too.
Yeah. Well, part of it is, like, you know, what else are they going to do with their lives? You know, I mean, Chelios has, like, a restaurant and I think, you know, a bar or something like that, but. You know, obviously the guy still loves to play. You know, as much as I hated him as a player, you know, give the guy credit. He's like 47, 48. He's still playing, you know, fairly high-level hockey. Good for him, you know. I mean, would that we all could do that, you know.
I met Marty McSorley.
Oh, yeah.
I met Marty McSorley in L.A., and you know, you talk about what else are these guys going to do. Well, he's working for the team, but he's certainly not working out much.
Yeah,
and,
he's
you know,
big
he's,
and doughy looking. I saw that picture you posted on your blog.
Oh my God, I got to put that. I'll put that on the rink site, www.rinkpodcast.com. I'll put it up there. But yeah, you're right. He is looking pretty doughy because, you know, work out all
he
the
was,
time.
He was
all
an
the time,
actor for a while. He showed up in a few
was
big
he?
Movies. Yeah, he was in, the hell movie was he in? He was in a couple of those, like, Bruckheimer movies because Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, the big Hollywood producer.
Oh, yeah.
He was a big Kings fan and stuff. And, he was in, I think he was in that Nick Cage movie, Con Air. He was like,
was he?
Yeah, he had like a couple little bit roles. I mean, yeah. But you know, while he was still playing.
Was he better than Jeremy Roenick when Roenick tried his little acting?
Yes.
He was awful.
Everybody was better than Jeremy.
Speaking of Jeremy Roenick, when throughout the Olympics, we've been busting Eddie Olchek's his chops quite a bit. And there were, you know, I think everybody deserved their turn.
Yeah.
But Roenick pretty much held his own. He did a good job.
Yeah, you know, he kind of has that exuberant style, and, you know, he's kind of he's a bit clownish, but, you know, I mean, pretty much, you know, he was fun. He was fine, you know. I mean, Milbury was trying to be like Mr. Tough Guy, which is his shtick, right. You know, and calling people Euro trash and, you know, all that
stuff. That was hilarious.
But, yeah, I mean, I think Roenick was fine, you know. I mean, he obviously, like, he sort of had in mind this acting career. He was going to go into acting, but, I mean, I think, you know, he can certainly be a fine broadcaster somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see some of these guys who end up as, like, you know, color men in some of the local, you know, NHL teams, and it's just, you know, he can do better than that.
Well, so. A lot of guys, you know, they – I mean – everybody loves tradition and all that, but there's only so long these guys can last in those gigs. You know, eventually you gotta bring some new blood in. Roenick, I mean, he did
Peter
so much.
Peter McNabb's been there for a while.
Oh, Peter. Oh, where everything's great and everything's wonderful. And that was a veteran penalty to take. And yeah, Peter McNabb. Roenick, though, I mean, he's unpolished. He's very unpolished. Yeah. But he also had he had his time on what was he doing? Fox Sports, that Best Damn Sports Show. He'd be on that all the time.
Yeah, he'll go on anything that'll take him, pretty much. I think.
But. Yeah, I think he's good. I thought he did a great job. Doc Emmerich, I don't know. I think Doc does a good job, but you know, I think you just get tired of him all the time.
He likes to fill the space. He doesn't. You know, he has to kind of say something in as many words possible.
Yeah,
and I like
the
him
Doc
too.
Emmerich thesaurus.
Yeah, you know, it's just like and his, you know, he likes to invent new verbs every second. You know, he spranks the puck up the ice.
Yeah, what was it today? Shanked, I think, was one
shanked,
of them.
And he twirling,
spin,
pirouetting. He loves, you know, he loves all these different kinds of verbs.
Yeah. It's like, Doc, you're not trying out for This American Life. Quit painting the
scaled.
Picture.
Scaled. I remember scaled the puck up off the boards. Yeah, that was one. Like he's been doing it for years. Like you know, but
Beninati does the same thing on Versus.
Yeah,
it's you know, was it? They've got two tallies. There's 30 ticks left in the.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like the Bruins radio guy, Dave Goucher, likes to say, going left to right across your radio. You know. He's painting a picture.
I guess that helps when you're talking about like, oh, he's on the, you know, he shoots on the short side. Well, yeah. Okay, you know.
So I
makes sense.
Yeah,
still,
actually,
yeah.
Like Craig, was it Lachlan, the color guy in the Caps games? He's pretty funny because he's got that locker. He's got that accent. You know, he's a Canuck guy, but
not to be a total homer, but you got to hear Mark Mosier was for the Avs. I asked him on Twitter because he's on Twitter as Avalanche Radio.
Okay.
And he's really good on Twitter. Like unlike some Avalanche media people that I will not mention.
What?
And I asked him on Twitter, how are you keeping your energy up? And he's like, oh, 5-hour energy. He just kicks it in the pants, and he makes everything sound exciting. It's absolutely hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's just him. He doesn't even have a color guy.
Oh,
he's
really?
Just,
yeah. Really?
Wow. They cheapened out, and you know. All
but
that.
Did he have one, and they cut the guy?
He was the color guy.
Oh, okay.
And and now he's on play by play, and he does a really good job.
Who's the dude who? It's a former NHL guy who does color on the Panthers. I think it was the Panthers radio.
Espo? Phil Esposito?
No.
Because he was on there for a while.
Oh, no. It's some dude who he was doing these crazy calls. And like I guess like he had some bet where he had
Moyer.
To work in.
Was it Moyer?
Randy Moeller. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. He still does them.
Yeah.
There's YouTube videos
of
him.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And like he basically has to work in this crazy, you know, I think like, I don't know.
People
like,
are now submitting them.
Yeah, and he'll get them in.
Them.
Yeah.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, it just has nothing to do with the goal or the team or anything. But yeah, it's hilarious. And, you know, I mean, obviously the guy's got a sense of humor. So
oh, yeah.
You got to love that.
You have to. I think that, you know, radio is, now that, you know, now that we have NHL Center Ice and a lot of those games are in HD. What's the point of listening on the radio? And it's great when you're driving. I love it when I'm on a long drive. I've got XM satellite radio.
Oh, nice.
But really, you know, people are going to want to watch. So you might as well do something that's fun and entertaining rather than just, you know, do the dry call.
Right.
You know? They had the two guys in Anaheim who were absolutely hilarious. And every so often they would just poke fun at each other. They just the game would be going on and then they just zinger each other once or twice. And, and it was wildly entertaining.
Yeah, that happens on the Red Sox broadcast when they get bored. The
baseball,
TV.
Of course. You
yeah, obviously. But like, you know, if it's a blowout game, like Jerry Remy, you know, former player, is the color guy for the Red Sox TV broadcasts, and this guy Don Orsillo is the play-by-play, and like they'll just crack each other up, like they'll just start, like Orsillo will just start giggling, like, you know, if it's like an 8-1 game, you know, either way, in, you know, the fifth inning, they'll just start talking about stupid stuff. It's
kinda
pretty
like these guys do on the Versus on the, you know, they'll just stop calling the game for a little while and talk about their own careers back when they're playing.
Yeah.
Oh, that after a while it kind of gets annoying when you're watching and it's like, guys, there's a game going on, but then you realize like. Yeah,
maybe there
really
isn't. There's whatever this is.
So you're also a Toronto Blue Jays fan.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not going to talk baseball per se. But how do you I have a hard time transitioning after, you know, a season of hockey or whatnot, and I go look at a baseball game, and it's like, wow, it's a nice way to waste an afternoon, I guess. But
I've always been I've loved the game since I was a young child, so I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. You know, I mean, it's just different. You know, I don't expect massive excitement, I guess, you know. But I will say that I don't watch as much baseball as I used to. I don't know if that's short attention span. It's like I can't sit and watch like a 3-hour game now.
Right.
I mean, I can't. I go to games, and obviously you do there. But when it's on TV, it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's funny. People say they can't watch hockey on TV. It's hard to watch baseball on TV now.
Yeah.
And I've watched tons of games. But playoffs, I'm riveted. But it's just like it's the stakes. You know, Roy Halladay, when he was on the Jays, up in, you know, he's not anymore, but, you know,
Where did he go to?
Phillies.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, they're stacked.
You know, I knew it wasn't going to be the Pirates.
Yeah. But, you know, like, if he was pitching last year, you know, against the Sox or whoever, like, I would watch every pitch of that because the guy's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, premier performers, you know, but it's just like now baseball, it often ends up in the background while I'm doing something else, which is, you know, and, you know, if I'm watching a Leafs game, any other game, I'm pretty riveted unless they're starting to really get, you know, suck and I get pissed off. But baseball, it's a different animal. But
such
I like
a,
it.
It's such a slow pace for me now. I can't watch it much.
I've gotten into football a lot. You know, rooting for the Patriots around here. You know, there's been some pretty good stuff to watch, and the NFL. I think they do a great. It's a great TV sport. I think it's better TV than live. Whereas, you know, probably the other sports are the other way.
I haven't been to a live football game since I was probably 15.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, it's good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, well, yeah, live, it's tough because you miss a lot. There's so many small little plays within the play that you can't see from your vantage point.
But you get a couple replays of something slowed down.
But on TV, like on TV, you can just, you know, and really there's like so many arcane rules that even like the most seasoned football fan, sometimes you don't pick that up if you're just watching it, a game played on the field in front of you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, the replays, you don't get to see the replays, and, you know, so, that's a great TV sport. Basketball, I've never been a basketball fan. I totally admit that I'm a bandwagon jumper with that. Cause like, I can't get into regular season hoops. Playoffs, I watch a little bit. You know, when the Celtics are doing all right, I'll watch them. But
ice skate sounds so cool when they're making that stop. That shh.
Yeah,
but,
right. You know, the squeak shoes, of sneakers.
Oh, it just grates me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get behind the Nuggets if they do anything, but other than that, I just, you know, it's just getting in the way of my hockey.
Right.
It's something that pushes, you know, pushes it off of Sports Center, which I haven't even watched Sports Center in, gosh, since the season started. I just don't see a reason if there's not going to be hockey highlights.
Yeah, I only watch it when I'm at the gym on the treadmill and there's a TV in front of me and I have no control over the remote. So, there's never any hockey on, which is, you know, there was when they had hockey and then, you know, occasionally they do some stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, I get to see my fill of hockey stuff, you know, with NHL Network and you know, the Center Ice package. So I don't get too upset about it. Yeah, I don't watch Sports Center either unless I'm like, you know, captive audience. So.
Right. I understand. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, I appreciate it. I'm sorry that it's a lost season, essentially.
I'm used to it. I still enjoy it. You know, I'm not one of those guys who like their team's out of the playoffs and they don't pay attention, you know, like move on to other things. I love hockey. I love watching the playoffs. So I follow it and, you know, right to the end. So,
yeah, me too. I'll once the Avs are out, I'll bandwagon along until I, you know. Until
You pick
anymore.
Somebody to root for. You'll root against Crosby and then,
exactly.
Yeah,
and you know, if it's unless he's playing the Red Wings against the Red Wings.
Wow, yeah, what's I'll that? Is that just like you hope for like a mutually assured destruction
lots of,
or something?
Lots of lots of Malkin. I'm really behind Malkin on that. No, I'm if it's the Penguins versus the Red Wings, I'm totally in the bag for the Penguins at that point. I just want them to stop showing me highlight reels or interviews with Crosby, and I'd be a lot happier, you know, that way. That's, you know, you got to pick your points,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, definitely.
That's, you know, that's what I got to do. Well, your podcast is completely conspicuous.
Yep. The URL is compcon.mevio.com, so check that out.
And your blog is at
jzkumar.blogspot.com.
Which I still, you know, I know it's an old gag for you, but Jay's Bliznog.
Kumar's Bliznog.
Kumar's Bliznog. It just cracks me up.
Hey.
Let me ask you this, because I've actually been a little bit curious. How would you describe your podcast? What would you...
It's pretty... I have a lot of interest. Like, I guess, like, you know, when I was first trying to figure out what to do for a podcast, I was like, should I do a hockey podcast? Should I do... I'm a runner, so should I do a running podcast? Because I listen to lots of different kinds of things. And I really just kind of talk about whatever I'm interested in, so which can be anything from, you know, hockey, mm-hmm. to pop culture, movies, music, and, you know, like journalism. I'm a former reporter, so, you know, I'm very interested in that. So, I've the last 40 episodes or so, I've had guests on most of them. So, mm-hmm. You know, I usually have somebody on. There's a lot of back and forth, kind of like this, about a particular topic. And, you know, some of them are supremely silly and some of them are somewhat serious. So, it's not about one thing. And I know, like, you know, people.
You had some good end of the year stuff for lists of stuff that you were
enjoying. I did a lot of lists, you know, top movies and top music and stuff like that. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. Basically rang every possible subject out of that. But I'm interested in a lot of different things and I like to bring that to the show. So, you know, if you tune in, there's probably something you'll be interested in. Well, hopefully.
It's not a specifically hockey podcast, but expand your horizons, people. It's a good podcast.
Thanks.
Jay, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you.
That does it for episode number 60 of The Rink. The Rink can always be found at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out how to subscribe in iTunes and comment on anything that you heard here, or find links to any of Jay's sites. You can call us at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. And you can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. As ever, thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.